This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
The cabin is dark, way past resting hour. I stand on my bed gown, listening to the heavy wagon roll against the gravel outside and come to a stop. I'm supposed to be asleep, resting for daybreak when I'll feed the chickens, grab the eggs, and run like crazy before those pink, thorny feet chase me out of the coop. I always sneak a few extra for Olin, carefully tucking the eggs under the hay for later. The rest of the basket goes to the Holt house. I feed the hogs, too, while Papa Sepp stands close by, watching with a keen eye, his good eye. He lost the other when he was a boy. This is G.P. Gottlieb, and today I'm talking to author Tricia R. Thomas, whose novel What Passes for Love tells the coming-of-age story of Dahlia Holt, a beautiful 16-year-old slave whose father is the white plantation owner. During a special 16th birthday outing to the city, Dahlia gets separated from her sisters and grandmother, and two young Englishmen come to her rescue. Afraid to give her real name, she invents a new one. Moments later, when chaos erupts because of a nearby bank robbery, the town is forcibly cleared, and Dahlia can't find her family. The two kind gentlemen take her home with them, and it takes some time for Dahlia to understand both the life she chose and the consequences of being a runaway slave with a bounty on her head. Hi, Tricia. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So did you base this story on a real person? And if so, can you say more about what you learned?
I based this story on a photograph that I found, actually. I was actually planning to do the historical novel, and I was looking for information on plantations in Virginia, and I actually stumbled upon this beautiful picture in 1861 of three sisters, and they're probably 4, 5, 6 years of age, and they're dressed in these little pretty dresses, and they have capes and hats. I mean, they look like they're little European girls, on their way to go shopping or something. And then at the bottom of that picture, it says, Three slave sisters emancipated in 1861. And I was just floored because they could easily pass for white. They could easily have been in any family at any time. And I just thought, I had so many questions. Who are these little girls? I mean, who raised them? What happened? Like, how in the world, you know, did they fit into this world where they were slaves and yet they looked completely like, you know, any little girl that you might see in, you know, Colorado or Iowa. I mean, they were little, they were white. And so, you know, to the eye. And I just thought, I want to tell their story. And so I, you know, really just started scoping out, you know, what would this world be like for this one particular little girl who, you know, out of those three, you know, did have more Afrocentric features, you know, fuller lips, a little bit of a wider nose. But I just wanted to focus on, you know, what would happen if two of them were accepted and one of them wasn't. And that one became Dahlia Holt in my story.
So, of course, I want to talk more about what passes as love and Dahlia Holt. But let's take a step back. I understand, Tricia, that you hold a BS in economics. How did you become a writer?
Well, I did. I wanted to be a writer all of my life. And it just wasn't a possibility for me. I mean, when you grow up, I'm Black, and we live in this world where all the writers that we know are Danielle Steele or Jackie Collins. And, you know, I didn't know of any Black writers. I mean, I read James Baldwin, of course, and books that were brought into my life for literature purposes were very rare. It was a rare thing to see. And so I just always assumed I couldn't make a living. That's not something you do. That's something you know, dawdle or play around with. And so I went into science, and I had a real high level of, science background, acclimate, or as they say. And so I focused on that, and I went in and got a Bachelor of Science in Economics, and I did marketing and demographics and things like that. But I always wanted to write. And I know you hear that story a lot where it's just this beating at the back of your head. Like, you know, you're meant to do something else. And when I got the chance, you know, my husband took another job. And so I could stay at home and I could write. And it was just like the doors just opened up and I couldn't stop myself. I was writing all hours of the night. I was so happy to get the chance. And so that's how it started.
And now you have 11 novels already published. Especially, there's like 9 of them in the very well-known Napoli series. Can you say something about that? I understand it's even out on Netflix now.
Yes. Well, Napoli Ever After was my debut book, and it actually was optioned for film before it was even published. A well-known actress, Halle Berry, she had just won an Oscar for her role in Monsters Ball with Billy Bob Thornton, I think that's his name. Mm-hmm. And so she had a little bit of signing power at that time, and someone had given her, you know, my manuscript and said this book, you know, is perfect for you. And she took it on and really pushed for it to become a film. And sadly, it never happened for her, but it went on to be adapted for Sanaa Lathan, who is also a really, really phenomenal actress. And so it made it into the Netflix library, and it really did well. And it's a fun film, and it really captured the essence of the book. So I was happy with it.
So we could talk later about the movie of What Passes as Love. So now, how did you pinpoint the geographical location of where you wanted the novel to take place? What Passes as Love?
I wanted, as a matter of fact, that played an important part in the story because I wanted them to be close to the North so that it wouldn't be, I always knew I wanted her to take this journey, and to make her escape and be able to get from one place to the next and feel this empowerment that she was safe, you know, even if it was only in her mind. And so I wanted her to be northern, in the northern northern south, if that's a term. And I wanted her to be able to get there to New York and Washington, D.C., those kind of places realistically. So that's pretty much how I pinpointed where the story was going to take place. I didn't want it to be in Louisiana or Texas or Florida, you know, somewhere really, really far that this journey would be almost impossible for her to make, especially as a young girl. So it played a big part.
So Virginia.
Yes.
Okay. What was the significance of the birthmark that distinguished Dahlia?
Oh, I love that part. It was a sign that she was of two parts, black and white. You know, her father is the plantation owner, the master, and her mother is a slave. And so it was significant to have that scar down the center of her back that the other slaves saw her as being, you know, separate from them in a way that she was both. She was both of these people, and which side do they trust? And mm-hmm. so it made sense to me to give her that scar. And
like a birthmark.
Yeah, it was a birthmark. It wasn't a scar. It was a birthmark, but it appeared as a river down the center of her back.
Yeah, I liked that part. Why does the owner have Dahlia brought into the big house?
His mother, Mother Rose, is this character who is sweet and really a kind woman, but she sees that this little girl looks exactly like the other two daughters, her other granddaughters that are in the house. And she knows it's her, she knows it's Lewis Holtz, her son's offspring, of course. He's been very busy out there. So he knows all of the, she knows all of the offspring, but she sees this little girl running around with her friend, Bo, who is very dark. And so when they're holding hands, she can see, you know, the big difference. And even though she knows she's a slave, she wants to separate her and pull her into the home. And so she sends her son, Lewis Holt, to the quarters to get this little girl and bring her back so that she can have her close to her in the home. And she even attempts to try to raise her in the same way that the other daughters are being raised. But he, you know, Lewis Holt puts a stop to it.
Do you think the grandmother loves her granddaughters equally?
I think she would like to love them equally. I think in her heart she does, but it's hard to, in front of the other little girl, she can't show that love because Dahlia's supposed to be the slave and the house girl. And so she can't do it without getting the ire of the other little girls, Leslie and Annabelle. So she doesn't really make it known. And she keeps their relationship almost a secret between them. And mm-hmm. and I really love Dahlia and Miss Rose relationship because I know Dahlia felt that love. And even if she couldn't present it, you know, fully in public, and she had to keep her in her place as Lewis Holt constantly told her, she knew.
Yeah. Why is Bo forbidden to talk to Dahlia after she moves into the big house? He is such a strong, a wonderful character. I told you before that I think he was my favorite character.
Oh, I
in the
love
book.
That.
Well, so where does he get his strength from? He's a kid. He's only 20 years old.
He is. He and Dahlia have been friends, you know, practically growing up together, right next door to each other as the cabins are laid out. And he's a strong little boy. He's seen it all. This is not like, you know, our current times where a little boy can be a little boy. He has seen everything. He's seen beatings and hangings and pain and endured some trials of his own. So he grows up pretty fast. And he sees when Dahlia's taken away that this may end badly. And he watches over her as best he can, but she's separated from them. And Miss Rose, this is her main issue, is that Dahlia looks white enough to not be a part of the quarters, a part of the other slaves' lives. So she tries to keep them separate because obviously Dahlia really, really loves, in a child way, loves Bo. And she doesn't want it to grow into anything more than that.
Yeah. So now comes her 16th birthday, and through a series of happenstances, she ends up with these English brothers. And let's talk about them. Can you introduce them? The question I really want you to answer, though, is how does their belief that slaves are required for their household fit with their pride in their homeland, in their homeland of England, having given up slavery years before the United States?
Timothy and Ryland Ross, they're the two brothers. They're English, and they've come to the Americas with their mother, with the hope of starting their own plantation. And they simply believe that because slavery is a right for Virginia and for the Americans that are there, that's what they came for, is to have this plantation. Why shouldn't they indulge and have, reap all of the rewards that are due to them? They couldn't have it in England because, as you said, slavery was ruled out long before. And Timothy actually believes that because of that slavery being ruled out, that they could never, their family, their long line of family could never get ahead because they were always in a hard place. They could never catch up to what was happening in America. And so coming over, they just, were excited that they were going to have a chance to build this amazing life and this, have this land and, have free labor. And, they convinced their aunt, Gertrude, that they too could, build something here. And so I think, I hate using the word privilege, but they believed that it was their right, and they had the privilege of not worrying about anything besides carrying on and making sure their plantation became profitable. That was their only goal.
Neither of the brothers are completely good or bad. I think you did a really good job of that. That's hard to do. How do you want the reader to view them?
I really want them to see that they were only doing what they thought they had a right to do. They only wanted what they thought they had a right to have. And that was everything. I mean, the land, the plantation, the house, a wife, a family, they wanted what was due them. And I don't think that's a far cry from anyone, that, when you have the freedom to live your life and you have aspirations and you have dreams, you expect those things. And so that's who they were.
Yeah. I thought your backstory was also fascinating in that nobody's completely good or bad. Even among the slaves, they all have distinct personalities that you made sure that some of them weren't as nice as others.
Right.
Can you address some of that?
Well, the human factor is what I was trying to present, because I wanted everything on the table, that these are real people. They have good parts, they have bad parts, they have souls, they have, they have aspirations as well. And so it's hard to see that if you don't fill in all of the blanks. And I read a lot. I'm a big reader, and it would frustrate me often, you know, to read the historical novels and find that the slaves' stories are so limited to only how it serves their white master or, you know, their in that environment. Outside of that environment, their thoughts are even limited to, you know, what they're going to do for that day for that person. And so I just wanted to create really memorable characters that have these lives and personalities. I mean, we have Essie, who is just hell on wheels. I mean, she wants freedom and she wants a life. She wants Bo. And so she's willing to do whatever she has to do to make that happen. And so it was just my goal to make sure I painted full brush strokes and everybody got a full life, a full backstory.
Let's talk about Cleo.
I love Cleo.
Me too. She is wonderful. Can you say something?
Cleo really was important because she's the bridge that, you know, connected Dahlia to this other family. And she knew probably right away that Dahlia was a slave. Not maybe a slave, but she knew she was Black and had mixed race in her. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted Dahlia to have someone that she could trust and pour her heart and soul to and have a place where we could hear the interaction. And Cleo keeps trying to tell her, you know, pick a side, decide where you want to be and own it. And it was just really hard for Dahlia to do, but Cleo, you know, kept trying to help her along. And I think that that's so important to have that connection with anyone, someone. And I wanted that in the story for her to have, you know, she had already lost Miss Rose. So I just wanted her to have someone who could give her a hand and help her. She's young. She's only 16. Dahlia, she's really young. So it was important that she have someone who could still watch over her. And that was Cleo.
It certainly wasn't the matriarch of the family, who is quite a piece of work.
Did
you ever come to like Tilda, the mother of the two English brothers, as you wrote about her?
I really like all my characters, and Tilda was no different. I really wanted it to be known that she just wanted what was best for her sons, and that is all. She has one goal, and that was to make sure her sons were happy and got everything that she thought they deserved. She really didn't even care so much about herself. It was all about her sons. And I don't think that's a far stretch at all. I mean, Black mothers, white mothers, it doesn't matter.
Mothers, right.
Yeah. You want what you want your children to be well taken care of. And even though she stepped out of bounds wanting something for Timothy that really wasn't what Timothy wanted, you know, it was what she thought was best.
So, it was a wonderful novel. Just that. Everybody should read it. I'd like to know what you're working on next, Tricia. What can we expect?
I am working on a biographic retelling of Diane Carroll's early life. She was an actress who won the first Tony Award for a Black woman in 1961. And she was Julia on TV. She was the first Black woman to have her own TV series. She was the first Black woman to be nominated for an Oscar for a feature role for the main character. And so she's just an amazing person. And of course she had, you know, the 9-year relationship with Sidney Poitier while, you know, they were both married. And I just know that most people, when they think of her, that's all they remember is that affair. And I thought, this this shouldn't stand. There's so much more to her, and I can't wait until that story comes out.
Ah, that sounds like a wonderful idea. Good luck with that. Thank you so much for joining me today, Tricia. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Gottlieb. This has been a really wonderful interview, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
And thank you for joining me. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking with author Tricia R. Thomas about her novel, What Passes as Love. Hope you're all able to lose yourself in a good book today and tomorrow, too. Happy reading.